Hello, this is Sam, and this episode of Ask an Atheist is different than most. We had a lot of technical issues come to a head today, and we had to do a little bit of a tension breaker, and we had to cover for a lot of stuff. It's a good episode. My co-hosts are great. They're fantastic people, and they're really good at their jobs, and it's definitely worth listening to. And then the show ended, and we kept going for a while because we had to, you know, add some material because we had a power outage and a whole bunch of stuff. And honestly, it was a tension breaker. Like I said, a lot of stuff happened today and it got weird. So in a break from what Ask an Atheist has done for the last 4 years, the second half of this show may not be safe for all ears or any brains. So just keep that in mind. And without further ado, here is Ask an Atheist, the event. It's definitely fall, I think, now, right?
Feeling a little wet.
Yeah, feeling fairly wet. and as far as I'm told, that's what fall means in Washington State. I'm from where it's very flat and cold, and so fall means, you know, it's time to bust out the really heavy clothes and stuff like that. But here it just seems to get a lot damper. How about you, Becky?
I think fall is named specifically for slippery wet leaves that make you do as such.
That is true. That is something I've had to pay attention to.
For those of you who don't know what Western Washington is like, we don't actually have four seasons. We have wet and dry.
Well, you have wet.
We have wet. Wet, and then
you have wet and the absence of wet. Right?
Okay, 3 weeks in August.
Yeah. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842, toll-free nationwide. And it is indeed the beginning of fall. We're approaching Thanksgiving, one of my favorite holidays because it gives me a chance to fry a turkey. I love frying a turkey.
In the rain.
In the rain, in fact. Yeah, sometimes in the rain, sometimes it's freezing. It's usually not a... it's not as scary as it sounds, especially when you're a home brewer. You actually get the frying equipment for free.
Nice.
So my name is Sam Mulvey. Joining me today is Rebecca Friedman. How are you?
I'm quite well.
And Dave Brulette, how are you?
I am excellent. Thank you.
Fantastic. So there is some very interesting news on the legal front, which we should probably talk about, especially given the way that atheists sometimes talk about this. And it's just one of those weird things that it's about language and everything like that, especially, and this is weird when it comes about to legal stuff. Ask an Atheist has previously discussed the story of Jason Holden, a federal inmate in Oregon who had been barred from forming a humanist study group because secular humanism had not been recognized with the same privilege as official religious groups. A federal district court in Oregon has ruled in favor of the atheist inmate, who co-filed along with the American Humanist Association, recognizing secular humanism as an official religious assignment for the Establishment Clause purpose. The ruling marks a victory for secular groups across the country seeking access to the same legal rights afforded to members of theistic organizations.
Here's where it gets really interesting. A lot of people that are atheists and secular humanists will say, of course, it's not a religion. There is no belief in the supernatural. But this is really key for those of us who, in all sorts of contexts, would experience discrimination or a loss of privilege or privileging religious groups, over people without that kind of religion.
Yeah.
This guy wasn't able to form a study group, but all of the people who want to do Torah studies and Bible studies and, recitations of your daily prayers in a community, in the prison, were able to. This is one of the only ways that, some people in some contexts have increased contact time with other, people in your peer group, social group, even if it happens to be in a federal prison.
Right.
Yeah. And it's, you have to understand that it's federal prison. This is a very structured life. And not just can he not have a humanist group without this ruling, but they're not allowed to congregate in groups larger than four.
Right.
Like even in like the rec yard, they can't congregate in big groups. So he can't put together a group of humanists even on his own because they're not allowed to meet in that large number of people. But now he can, because the courts, I feel rightly, have figured out that, yes, for this purpose alone, it counts as a religion. In a legalistic sense of what you are allowed, not allowed to do, it should count as a religion.
Well, I think what we're orbiting here, which we haven't said outright, is that there are a lot of people in the atheist community who get annoyed or mad or enraged or petulant or any phrase you want to use when people even start to talk about atheists and humanist groups in the same breath as religious groups in government situations like this. And this drives me nuts. This is basically D&D stuff. This is a dogmatic approach. Just because it says religion on the tin somewhere in some document somewhere, that makes it poisonous. And that's weird because you're putting regularity of language over human rights. And that's where I start having really serious problems with people in my movement. If you have a problem with terminology, fix the terminology. Don't deprive people of rights just because you don't like the way it sounds.
That's not a place where you want to make a stand and say, no, it's not a religion. Yeah. You should not have the same rights as everybody else, because then you have to say that I believe something. No.
Sure.
It's an entirely different context of, you know, legal speak here. So.
And it's in a completely different context from the day-to-day peer conversations that you have with possibly religious believers that say, oh, you're an atheist? Well, you know, that's just another religion.
Right.
Because how many times have we all gotten that?
Yeah. The watchword here is for establishment clause purposes.
Yeah.
They're not saying you worship a god. They're not saying you believe anything at all. It's just backing it up for the purposes of you know, the First Amendment and the establishment of religion clause. So beyond that, that doesn't mean you're not wrong. I mean, or that doesn't mean that you're wrong. It doesn't mean that it's kind of silly that we have to pretend the American Humanist Association or American Atheist or whatever are a religious organization. That is patently ridiculous on its face. Legalisms are often patently ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, and it comes to an interesting situation when you pile this on top of the IRS case that American Atheists put forth to try and force the IRS to start enforcing the laws about pastors preaching.
Right.
Because the rule was, or... No, I'm going down the wrong... Sorry.
Pastors giving political endorsements?
I'm going down the wrong case. I apologize.
Are we talking now about Freedom From Religion Foundation with the parsonage exception?
Yes, that's the one. The parsonage exception where they're trying to get rid of the exemption from churches, and then the government says, well, you can be a church too. And they're like, no, that's not the point.
And I totally understand that. If you bring me, you know, a potential amendment or laws that can be brought up in the legislature to get rid of that language from things like, you know, from the laws and from the Constitution, I will back you to the hilt. You are right. Where you fall off the road when you get mad about stuff like this is that we're somehow going to let legalistic terminology get in the way of rights. That's where I part ways, and that's the only place where I part ways.
I think some more fun look at sort of the legal designations of religions can be found in some of our European countries.
Sure.
Where Jedi Knight is an official religion in the UK.
Yeah.
Where copimism, which has no
communism?
Copimism. It's a religion in Scandinavia that is based on the philosophy that copying is a sacred act, aka file sharing.
Oh, right.
And is
yes.
to exempt
oh.
people from the laws of file sharing, since it is a religious expression. And it's using the structures of our legal documents and language to say, hey, look, if you're going to privilege these groups of people based on a belief that is really without tangible evidence, without merit in a lot of people's minds, why are you going to deny other kinds of rights to people that don't share that belief in a supernatural?
It's really interesting because we're getting out of the dogmatic approach to you know, cosmology and the idea of an authoritarian presence in the universe that really worries about how we go to the bathroom, and into a dogmatic approach to what legal documents should look like.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, legal documents are not D&D. You know, nobody mattered. It doesn't really matter if I have an epic level orc or not. but someone is, even in prison, even anywhere, human rights are important. To me, that's more important than any words on any page.
Yeah.
If I may say, my ancestral heritage ethnic religion was, I feel... a little bit of expert at that, of using legal language in order to execute your own dogma on that. You know, I grew up in a Jewish household of the, you know, in the Jewish tradition. Part of the tradition and cultures is looking with a very, very close eye at some of the legalistic loopholes that can be formed in order to try and trick your god from realizing that you have a shaved head, or that you are, you know, accidentally eating something that you're not supposed to. It's quite funny.
Using the oven on a Saturday.
Yes, exactly.
So to sum up, because I know I'm going to get a lot of mail for this, because every time I disagree with other atheists, I usually get it in the neck. I agree with you that the legal, you know, if you think that this is silly, that we have to call the American Humanist Association at all, you know, a religious organization for the purposes of the Establishment Clause, and you think that's silly and that's not the way it should be, I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
But that isn't going to stop me from going down that road if that's the way people get their human rights.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that is a value judgment, but I think it's an important one.
Rights trump semantics.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, a monument to Apple founder Steve Jobs was torn down on a Russian university campus in St. Petersburg after current Apple CEO Tim Cook announced that he was gay. The monument, which was a giant interactive iPhone with pictures of quotes of Jobs, was removed by ZEFS, the company that originally funded it. The chairman of ZEFS cited Russia's laws against gay propaganda and sexual perversion and said he would only rebuild the monument if it was redesigned to direct consumers to buy non-Apple products.
Talk about dogmatic.
What the heck, Russia?
It's this weird thing because it's like, would you really get into the level of anti-gay activism in Russia? It's a painful thing to watch this country just sort of take an entire culture and destroy it, really. But at the same time, when you kind of step back and look at some of these things they're doing, it's hilarious. Who would tear down a giant iPhone because the CEO says, yeah, I'm gay?
Right.
Like,
well, apparently someone in St. Petersburg in Russia.
Yeah. It's like, at what point is it okay to laugh at this stuff? And at what point do you have to stop and say, oh, there's still a lot of real harm behind this?
Well, here's another thing is, you know, in the 20th century, you had the Soviet Union, which had this weird idea. You know, they said we're an atheist country and they outlawed religion and they made a very dogmatic approach. And now it's a different thing where the Russian Orthodox Church is back in ascendancy, and now it's completely different organizations who are now the bad guys. It's like out of the frying pan into the exact same frying pan with a different name on it.
This one's purple, that one's, yeah.
Yeah. It's very strange, and I don't know what to, this is just ridiculous. Why do you have to why does government have to say perversion is something we pay attention to? This just drives me nuts.
I don't know, but I think that there's a religious person somewhere saying, "Yay, they've torn down the false idol of the telephone." So I think
yeah. The false idol of the telephone. Oh boy. So we have something coming up this week that we're really looking forward to. There is a debate about does God exist? It's an age-old one, but it should be interesting to watch because it involves somebody from here in Ask an Atheist. It's featuring contributor Bob Seidensticker against Rand Wagner. It's this Saturday, November 15th at 6 p.m. at the Shelton Civic Center at 525 West Coda Street, Shelton, Washington. This is an interesting one. This one's just sort of this fellow approach to Humanists of Washington looking for somebody to debate, and boy howdy do we have one.
And you know, Shelton, it's a little far out there, but we'd love to have a good showing of Humanists and Atheists. So you know, if you're coming by, wear a t-shirt that declares right. yourself, or you know, have a friendly face for Bob and for Ask an Atheist folks, for Humanists of Washington,
right.
or just come to listen and learn.
Can we put together a supporters group for him so we have chants and singing every time he makes a great point? We all jump up and scream and yell.
Were I you, I would pay attention to the Humanists of Washington Secular South Sound Meetup group. If you can find on Meetup, which is all you where is you find the Ask an Atheist post show events, because I imagine we may be doing some getting together before, during, or after.
I think so.
Thing. I think that's something we could. Definitely do. And yeah, if you can make it to this one and you're in the Seattle area, it should be interesting because this is definitely under the auspices. I think this is under the auspices of the ProSides Church. Yes.
Yes. He has a thoughtlife.com and he has an online ministry. He's also a licensed funeral director and has done lots of different things in a religious leadership capacity.
Yeah.
And is of a Protestant stripe
right.
and is convinced that God exists. We are not.
Well, of course not. Otherwise, why would this be called Ask an Atheist, I suppose? This is Ask an Atheist, 844-753-7842. And we're going to go to a break. And when we come back, we are going to have a conversation with Dr. Anthony Pinn about humanist-related stuff. Should be really interesting. Stick around.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com, where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month, we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Secular humanism is a non-theistic view of the universe built on a foundation of reason, science, and democracy. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking, and we hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. For information on how you can be a part of the humanist activities in the Puget Sound area, become a member of the Humanists of Washington today. Visit humanistsofwashington.org.
Psst. Hey, I know that we all slip up sometimes, but not knowing your STD status at all, not a smart move. Did you know that STDs can even be transmitted through oral sex alone? Yeah. Worried yet? With STDHomeTestKit.com, everything you need is shipped to you, where you'll have results in the comfort of your own home in less than 10 minutes. Be certain of your status with STDHomeTestKit.com.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island nation of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC. That's 844-753-7842, toll-free nationwide. Joining us now is Anthony Pinn, a professor of religious studies at Rice University and the director of research for the Institute of Humanist Studies. He's with us today to talk about his newly published book, Everyday Humanism, which he co-edited with Dale McGowan. How you doing today? Hello.
Are you with us, Dr. Pinn? We'll hope that we can get Dr. Pinn.
Yeah, I hope that we can get him there.
We're looking to speak with Dr. Pin about some of the sort of little micro aspects of the lives of humanists. I think that that's a really interesting thing because there's a lot of large, big books about what humanistic philosophy is. But how does it really sort of relate and happen in everyday lives? I mean, we three identify largely as secular humanists, right, Dave?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, you don't go around your day, you know, day to day talking about, well, this is what makes me a humanist and I'm going to be philosophizing the whole time.
Right. It's how does humanism actually inform your daily life? Because, you know, we spend a lot of time about what we're not.
Dr. Penny, with us. Hello. Interesting. Okay. I'm going to have to take a look at that, I think. But in the meantime, why don't I give you guys a topic while I go look at that?
Okay.
Oh, boy. So we have a very quick email. let's see here. This is one we get all the time. Monty from the Internet writes, not here to argue. Just want to hear your opinion about what you think about Jesus. Take it away, Becky.
What I think about Jesus? What I think about Jesus is similar to what I thought about Jesus when I was a teenager, which was... Okay, seems like if he really existed, mostly good guy. A lot of people sort of took the idea of him and went really, really off the deep end in some respects. And then it wasn't until I was sort of later in my adolescence and then in early adult life that I looked at, there's not a lot of evidence that Jesus even existed. And there's a lot of people that lived around that time that seemed to have... followed similar stories or similar sort of trajectories about that.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I never kind of took for granted that, of course, there was a real guy that the original myth was based around. And then I recently read Nailed by David Fitzgerald, and I didn't realize how much evidence that, no, it might actually all just be made up. It was like a myth that somebody kind of took and built around, and that kind of snowballed into this monstrosity that is Christianity today.
Yeah, so I like this steamrolled snowballed. I'm not sure which one it is. Steamrolled over everything else, all the other sort of messiahs or people that were crucified or declaring themselves as highly knowledgeable and sons of God. Because we do have evidence that there were lots of people that were declaring themselves sons of God or that had been crucified and then followers had said that is the son of God or that is a messiah or that is a god.
Yeah, it's great. Best take for that is the Monty Python film, The Life of Brian, about the guy who was born in the manger down the street from Jesus and his life. It is absolutely hilarious, but it kind of makes a point. Like, there were other stuff going on at the time that you don't hear about because no one built a religion around it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there may have been other people that had built religions around them, but they just hadn't perpetuated.
They didn't.
I mean, the explosion of Christianity, you know, thanks to Rome, basically, once they adopted it, you know, was huge. So not here to argue. Well, clearly, because you're not here. I suspect that our emailer, though, may have some arguments. I don't know. I mean, what do we think of Jesus? I kind of wonder what our emailer thinks about Jesus.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And it's like, when I look at Jesus's philosophies, the thing that impresses me a lot is the fact that much of them are not original, and where they are original, they're not that great. So, you know, it's like when I look at, like, say, take the most basic one, the Golden Rule, the thing that everyone can agree on. Well, every religion has a version of the Golden Rule, and actually the Christian one is an inferior version of it.
There are some that say, do unto others as they would wish would be done with them. So, you know, as opposed to, because what you might want, what you might wish for how to be treated is completely different from my perception.
Yeah. And so, yeah, the Christian version of do unto to others as they would have done unto you, you would have them do unto you, assumes that you know what they would like.
Exactly. So, from there, from Jesus, we go to one of his biggest proponents, Pope Francis, because, Dave, did you hear that Pope Francis has recently spoken in favor of evolution and the Big Bang Theory?
I have actually heard quite a bit about this.
So Pope Francis, speaking to the Pontifical Academy of Sciences, stated that evolution and the Big Bang Theory are true. Francis insisted both theories were compatible with the existence of a creator and warned against imagining God as a magician with a wand able to do everything. The Vatican's stance on the origins of life and the universe have varied over the past 65 years. Pope Pius XII was the first to address evolution in 1950, saying that it didn't contradict biblical teaching, and Pope John Paul II called evolution effectively proven fact. But Francis's predecessor, Pope Benedict XVI, endorsed intelligent design.
Yeah, this one kind of drives me crazy because it falls under the anything Pope Francis says that isn't mind-bogglingly crazy, he's suddenly the greatest pope ever. And it's like, you know, this is something that the church has been okay with since the Korean War. You know, it's like, this is the, I believe, the Truman administration that we're talking about here. This is not a new idea. This is not something that we need to jump up and say, oh my God, the Pope, he's so amazing because he said evolution's true.
Well, I've seen sort of a meme being shared around intermittently with Pope Francis in this particular quote. And I think what it speaks to is that there's a lot of people that assume that religious people all believe that the earth is 6,000 years old and all believe that evolution didn't happen. And while that is the case in an alarmingly high percentage of Americans, it has not been a part of Catholic doctrine for quite some time.
No. Catholicism, there are many, many failings that we will spend a long time talking about with Catholicism, but sciences are usually pretty good on. The Jesuits are strong proponents of science and scientific thinking.
They just happen to believe that there was a creator behind all of these scientific phenomena, which atheists for the most part would say that isn't what we're familiar with, and there's no evidence to suggest that that's the case. And I mean, but in terms of Jesuits being proponents of science, I remember growing up, the observatory that we were able to use if we were middle schoolers and high schoolers, the telescope and, you know, a dome mm-hmm. thing, that had been donated by the retired Jesuits.
Yeah.
When we took field trips to go see the seismograph, the local seismograph was housed at the Jesuit retirement cloisters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. I mean, they had that whole run-in with Galileo a little while ago, but since then, you know, so much of our scientific knowledge in times when it wasn't really, you know, able to be recorded was recorded by priests and monks. I mean,
yeah. This is getting a little far afield, but there's one of my favorite science fiction books. It's called The Sparrow by Mary Doria Russell. And in it, they get a signal, kind of, SETI gets a signal from another planet, like a clearly civilization is out there that we can reach, sort of, you know, science fiction-y stuff.
Hello, do you like chicken?
So, the world is sitting there debating, should we go, should we not go, who do we send? The Jesuits just go, because they have the monetary backing of the Catholic Church, and that's what they want to do, because that's what Jesuits have always done, is they're the explorers. They are the first ones to go to a new place. And that is an entirely believable concept to me, that, like, in the future, that Jesuits could be the one who would actually lead the charge into space. Like, that does not surprise me, because that's the Catholic Church and science have never been really that at heads.
So, speaking of really being at odds and being at heads with each other, we're going to have a little follow-up story to something that we heard about a few weeks ago, and this is that 8 Egyptian men are sent to jail for attending a gay wedding. Ooh. I believe maybe we had heard about this a little while ago, but 8 men who were arrested in early September for attending a gay wedding were sentenced to 3 years in prison for debauchery. The men were on a video of an apparent gay wedding being held on a Nile riverboat. The prosecutor called the video a satanic ceremony full of scenes that were shameful, regrettable, and that angered God. The 8 men will also face 3 years of probation after their sentence ends.
Yeah, this is another situation of just absolute terrible human rights violation. Like, the fact that 2 people can't get married and a group of people can't celebrate that marriage just because of someone else's beliefs. I
have tremendous confusion about beliefs. I didn't realize that being gay had anything to do with Satan.
Yeah, yeah.
Well. At least not from the gay people's perspective, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, I you know, it's so heartbreaking to imagine, like, if I had 2 friends who were getting married and then imagining ending up in jail for 3 years just for going there to celebrate with them. Like, who are they harming? Who are, what is, what is the damage to society? It's this weird imagined insult to God.
It is an imagined insult. The other thing that really catches me about this one is that if everybody were jailed for 3 years for shameful scenes, shameful and regrettable scenes during a wedding, I think our jails would be full.
I've been to a few weddings that got a little out of hand. Yeah.
Shameful and regrettable. I'm interested in this Nile riverboat sort of thing. Is this a neutral zone? I mean, sometimes when you have medical ships that are off the coast of someplace, or gambling ships maybe that are outside of a particular land-based, you know, purview, are you outside of the purview of those laws in this case?
I don't think that would apply here since that Nile is still within Egyptian territory, the same way the Mississippi is still within U.S. territory. But if it were, say, in the middle of the Mediterranean instead of on the Nile, then maybe there actually might be getting away from the jurisdiction of these, you know.
But what we have seen is that even those who are citizens of highly, highly observant countries that have strict codes on behavior, on personal behavior, people who go abroad and practice these kinds of things are, you know, any objectionable behavior, are not immune to then prosecution once they return to their country. And that's one of the things that we see in countries that have strict blasphemy laws. You can go and you can give a talk at a university outside of your country and then risk, you know, being charged and jailed for blasphemy upon return. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that this one is actually blasphemy, just mere debauchery, regrettable, shameful things and satanic ceremonies.
Well, the reason that it's under debauchery and satanic ceremonies is because I don't believe that Egypt has a blasphemy law on the books. So, yeah, it's I'm not sure they can get it for blasphemy, so they're going to try and get it under some other way. Also, homosexuality is not illegal in Egypt, so they need to find another way, sort of an end around, to put gay people in jail there.
I see. So it's okay if you're gay, we just can't know about it or see it, and you can't actually marry the person that you love.
Talk about it, probably live with them. People will find out a way to get you in jail that for some other reason.
So should we look at one other thing that gets you in jail, okay, this time in Iran?
Oh, this is a fun one.
So a British-Iranian woman in Iran was sentenced to 1 year in prison for spreading anti-regime propaganda after attending a men's volleyball match in June. Ganche Gavami, a 26-year-old law student in London, she attended a match between Italy and Iran with a group of women who were arrested and beaten before being released. Gavami was later arrested again. Iran banned women from attending men's volleyball matches in 2012 as a part of an extension of a long-lasting ban on women at soccer matches. The law is intended to protect women from the lewd behavior of male fans.
Yeah, because let me say, there's no better way to protect women than to throw them in jail.
After beating them. We don't want them exposed to lewd behavior, but we can definitely expose them to physical punishment.
And as for lewd behavior, I've seen Orange is the New Black.
I mean, this is just the silliest thing. When you have a law that's intended to protect someone and their punishment is that they receive physical beatings and, you know, and detainment.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane and, like, offensive. Like, the fact that this type of stuff happens, I find offensive.
And here's the other thing, is that, you know, you have a British-Iranian woman. She's got dual citizenship. She's basically a foreigner, you know, or you know, why is she the only one that's being arrested, you know, rearrested and jailed when there is a whole group of women? It's, you know, to make this point.
If I had to speculate, I would probably say she spoke out against the fact that she was arrested and beaten for going to a volleyball game. I'm willing to bet that she would not. She was the one of the group who wasn't just going to let this slide, because she's a law student. She's a lawyer. She, you know, she understands rights.
I imagine there may also be some advocacy behind her besides just this law student.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you have, you know, humanist and secular organizations that testify, before the UN, saying we need to protect people's, you know, expressions, and you can't, you know, punish them based on the sort of ruling dogma of a particular nation. We see this with both non-religious people, and we see these with religious minorities in countries that have the very strict dogmatic approaches to, you know, proper behavior.
Yeah.
Whether it be getting married to a man, if you happen to be a man, or watching a sports match.
Yeah, yeah. It's, if I remember correctly, Amnesty International has been pushing for the release of Ms. Gavami. So.
We also see organizations like the International Ethical and Humanist Union that will also advocate for these types of things. But the thing is, that's quite alarming, is that this is not just one woman in Iran. This is not just eight men in Egypt. These are the kinds of things that happen across the world, and not just in Muslim nations. Many people will think, well, this is a problem in that part of the world. But we've seen that people are arrested or denied privilege or denied human rights in Europe, in Poland, in Austria.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking in this decade.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you also look at, like, in the Middle East, or not Middle East, but more in the South Pacific, with a lot of Buddhist cultures are oppressing Muslim people.
We see this particularly in Myanmar. Yeah. And it's you know, it's not just a single particular religion. It's not just a single government.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to break. When we come back, hopefully we'll have Dr. Pin on with us, and we'll be beyond these technical issues.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Maggie used to say, "Matt, never stop fighting. Don't ever give up." And as I look out across this crowd right now, I'll tell you, I can see her face in every one of you. I can hear her voice every time you speak.
His name was Matthew Hoffman, the candidate. And though he didn't understand it now, years of inaction, deceit, and fear had formed a cancer, and now it would destroy him. AnnexRadio.com.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to AskAnAtheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to PayPal@AskAnAtheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist. 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842, toll-free, nationwide. So we're going to have to apologize to our guest, Dr. Anthony Penn. We're having a little bit of a technical issue here. If you follow us on the website and go to askanatheist.tv later on, I imagine I'll be having to make a bit of an apology for this, but you know, growing pains for the show. This is just the kind of stuff that's going to happen to us now and again. I'm looking forward to that interview. We're going to be pre-recording the interview on the 17th and I believe airing it on the 23rd. Becky, is that the plan?
Yes, that is the plan. So we'll be able to hear from Anthony Penn on November 23rd. His book did just come out on October 31st, and okay. It is called Everyday Humanism.
All right. And Everyday Humanism, and it's co-edited with somebody?
Co-edited with Dale McGowan. Dale McGowan's a great guy that we've had on the air before.
Yeah.
Has a lot to say about atheist parenting, is a great founder of Foundation Beyond Belief, a proponent of Camp Quest, supporter, we'll be very much looking forward to speaking with his co-editor, Dr. Penn.
Fantastic. I'm really looking forward to doing that. Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist 844 Skeptic. That's 844-753-7842. Toll free nationwide. It is 4:15 local time. And if you're still listening, I'm surprised. But it's been a pretty trying day for me, I'll be honest with you.
I thought you were just going to call it brown trousers time.
It was totally brown trousers time.
I was just going to say, we have one listener.
Oh, we have a listener? Oh, that's mm-hmm. cool. All right. Well, more than just one listener is going to hear this, because this is going to end up being on the podcast feed. And if you're listening to us right now, go ahead and let people know that we're here. I will in a minute. I'll be posting on Facebook and stuff like that. But today was just another comedy of errors, to be honest with you. Let's see. The phone system broke.
There's a massive rainstorm.
Yeah, there's a massive rainstorm.
But it's not rain. It's like frogs.
Yeah. And I've got Rosalind here with me now, who is our PA today.
Hello.
She was at downstairs and handling the phone calls and basically telling everybody I suck, because that's what you have to do in those situations.
A production assistant, lots of assisting and not much production going on.
Yeah. So when I came to, when we started taking the show live, here in this studio rather than at KLAY, it actually ran really well for several months. But for some reason in the last couple months, ever since the beginning of October, I've had nothing but technical issues here. Every Sunday has been a freaking battle for me.
Seems like every week I hear stories that, and you know, credit to you and your professionalism and the professionalism of everyone else, is when I listen to the show on the podcast or on the air, I usually doesn't come across, but being here, seeing you running around screaming, I'm like, I don't know what happened.
Well, it's terrifying. It's
well, today we couldn't hide it because we couldn't bring in an interview, and then the power went out. Yeah. And the thing is, I've got UPSs all over the house that are supposed to keep the systems on in case of a power fluctuation. They didn't cut in. We lost our connection to the internet. Fortunately, the system I designed at the studio comes in with material we recorded several weeks ago for exactly this situation.
Right.
So we had a full hour of material at the radio station, but they're not going to hear this crap. Mm-hmm. So I'm making the split second decision today that for the foreseeable future, Ask an Atheist is going to be pre-recorded, possibly till the end of the year. I need to have the space to do some serious testing. I need to get the show going. I need to get this studio perfect. I can't really be getting along with make do anymore. It's just not working.
Building the airplane as we're flying it has gotten a little untenable.
It's what I've been doing since March, and I'll level with you guys. It's been taking its toll on me. I've having to fight this fight every week. It's been rough, and I've had the last couple of weeks especially have been very difficult for me. And this, I thought this week everything, I came in this morning, it's like, okay, everything's working, everything's fixed, everything's good, I can do this, I've covered all my bases. And then the phone reasons works for reasons that just fucking escape me. We're not on the air. I don't care.
Yeah.
And I just do not understand what's going on, because the audio is coming out of the, it's, I don't know, it's just like disappearing somewhere. I have no freaking idea what's going on. And then the power goes out, and the systems I have in place to prevent the power from going out didn't kick in. I've clearly bitten off more than I can chew here. I mean, I really want to do something different and special, and something that'll last. I want to build the tools to run a talk radio station completely out of open source software, which, as far as I can tell, is not something that's been done before, the way, you know, like from beginning to end open source software. There's usually something proprietary in the chain, because I want to share what I'm building here with other people. I don't want to be the only guy using this. I want more shows like mine. There needs to be a regional ask, and, you know, we're aiming to be a syndicated show, but there needs to be local shows too. There needs to be, other people are going to need to be able to do this, and I want to make sure the work that I do, it can be used by other people, and that's why I'm doing it this way. But clearly something is falling apart here, and I need to take the time to fix it. So I'm going to, I'm just going to make the production decision tonight, today, right here, that Ask an Atheist will not be live for the next couple months.
That doesn't mean that you still can't call in using our phone number.
Absolutely.
We would love to hear voicemails.
You can call in at 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We will be streaming live while we're recording. And what I think I'm going to do is what we're going to do is record the show at noon, and then get the radio stations the file by 2. And that gives them an hour to play the show. So the show will still be produced on the day, and we'll be doing end-to-end testing, because I need that data. I need to be able, you know, when 2015 comes along, and I press the on-air button, and we are actually on air, I need to know that everything's going to work. So we're going to be acting like we're recording it live. What's that?
And I don't mean to be like, wow, this is so awesome, because it's bad news that led to this, but you should know that that's... To be doing all that development and then be doing production at the same time,
right.
That's hard.
It has been hard.
I'm amazed that it's been going on as much as it has without, frankly, you tearing your hair out most of the time.
We've been doing it this way since March, and it's just not working anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I want to do it on Saturday, and one of the things that I am most proud of...
Sunday.
The day that the show is
Sunday,
on. Okay?
Sunday.
Thank yeah. You. Whatever day the show is on, that's the day we're airing on, and that's the day we're recording on. One of the things that I am most proud of as a producer of Ask an Atheist is that we have produced 1 hour of solid material every week since 2010 without fail. We have not had 1 week off. That means I have not had a vacation. I'm ready to murder everyone in the world.
Not really.
No, really.
I'll let her cover for me. But we all know.
I plead the fifth.
We all know the truth on that one.
Spousal privilege.
So the thing is, part of the reason I'm doing what I'm doing is I have long term plans to get other, like, Mike Warbington. I'll just say this right now. I'm already trying to get Mike Warbington to be my Jay Leno to be the Jay Leno to my Johnny Carson. Not the modern Jay Leno. Jay Leno when he's actually still kind of funny. and that's another thing, is I need to take weeks off. I haven't. And I definitely can't while I'm still building this freaking studio.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to finish it. And the thing is, we weren't supposed to be in this studio in March. We were, by my plan, we were only going to be in the studio a month.
Right.
And we've been here 6. And like Becky said, we're building the plane as we're flying it. And that's just getting to be a little bit too much for me. And I think today is the day where I draw a line and I say enough. Enough of that crap. So what we're going to be doing and what my plan is, and this is just as much to the cast and crew of Ask an Atheist as anyone else, is we're just going to shift the schedule 2 hours forward. So we're going to get together at 11 or noon. We'll do pre-show. We'll record from 1 to 2. I do production, and then I get the station. I get the audio of the station, so it's still timely. It's still new. We're still doing end-to-end testing. All of you guys who are listening to the stream right now, you'll still get the fresh stuff. You're still getting the good shit. But it's just gonna be a little bit the schedule is going to be juggled a little bit until I'm confident that this studio is ready for prime time, because right now it's not.
And this may be something that's a little bit revealing to some of our listeners and fans, is that the cast and crew of Ask an Atheist regularly does work throughout the week to prepare our shows. Dave, you're our head writer.
Yeah.
You're sitting there doing our writing, pecking away at the computer, searching for things, monitoring our feedback from our listeners. And we get together at 1 o'clock. That's 2 full hours before we air.
And that doesn't talk about all the crap I have to do during the week, building the studio and all the other stuff. Like, we've got new, there's so much crap that I'm sitting on. Like, we have a new logo for the show, and it's great. It's beautiful. I really want to use it, but I haven't had time to like make the website changes or get business cards printed up or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I have basically checked out of writing. We do writing credits. You notice I'm not on them very often.
Yeah,
I don't write anymore.
It's pretty much, we show up at 1 to do production meeting. That's when Sam learns what the show's about.
Yeah, like. And well, you know what? I'm proud of myself that I could just roll in and do an hour like that. I don't want to.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got Paul here, who's sitting in the studio. We've got an episode about military and atheism that I have been sitting on for years because I wanted to do it right. I wanted to get it right. There are certain topics that I need to stick the landing on just as much for myself as anybody else. And while I'm working on the studio and being Captain Pocket Protector here in my attic, I can't do that. So this is also going to give me space to do that. I'm sorry to going on here, but this is a little bit of a catharsis for me, because I don't talk about this, professionalism. I do not talk about this on the air.
Yeah.
What my job to you guys, my promise to you guys, is to get you 1 hour of serious material, of material that works, that sounds good, that doesn't sound like it was recorded from the bottom of a freaking coffee can an hour. And it's getting kind of hard. So I need to create some space to do that for myself, and that's what I'm doing.
I think it's always interesting to see stuff when just you're a casual listener and you hear a random episode versus, I've been around you guys since the show has started, essentially.
You are my first friend here in Washington
State. Yeah, so I remember you guys going, well, I want to make a show about atheism. I'm like, yeah, wacky kids today. But as I've seen things progress and I've kind of watched from the sidelines, it's really interesting to see like how much effort, and this is a full-time job.
It's for right now, for me, it's been way more than a full-time job.
Exactly. And people just kind of go, oh, it's just some guy who does a thing 1 hour a week.
Well, like I said, I love podcasting and everything like that. I think it is how talk radio is going to be in the future. But for us, our purpose is to be on terrestrial radio. Mm-hmm. Our purpose is for people who will not seek us out to find us.
Mm-hmm.
That makes us maybe a little less interesting to people inside of the community who are more into the debate du jour. But that our show, has a very specific purpose. It is an activist purpose for me, and I want to make, and if it sounds like junk, I'm working against my purpose. So
and no one's gonna listen to you,
and no one's gonna listen to me. So this is really incredibly important, and it has, I'll be honest with you, it's got other effects too. People have wondered and have asked me privately, well, what's the deal with you and Mike Gillis, because he's working on Radio Versus the Martians, da da da. It's fine. Everything's fine.
We're all friends still.
I'm sitting where Mike sits when he records Radio Versus the Martians. He does it here. He comes to my house to do it. Yesterday, I went to the Jet City Comic Show to table for Radio Versus the Martians.
Yeah.
We're as friendly as we've ever been. I'm on his show all the time. Becky, you were on his show last week. You've been on the show.
Going to say, you're friendlier with him now that
we have less to fight about.
Exactly. Yes. We're all very good friends. None of us hate each other for the most part.
And so that's a part of my decision too. Is I want to make sure that I can do a good show just for me, but I can also be the good technical help guy that the other people who depend on me to get this done can. So enough of that. So I got some people I got to thank this week. I'd like to thank Christopher from Toledo, Ohio, Rick from Elma, and Candace from Bremerton, Washington, who writes, thank you for doing what you do.
Oh boy, Candace, now you know all that we do.
Oh, those words. Oh, those words. These are the people who met Peggy's Challenge, which, as you guys know, is Peggy's Challenge to the listeners of Ask an Atheist to help us keep the lights on. If you'd like to help me do that, if you want, you know, it's like that National Lampoon ad, you know, subscribe to our magazine or we'll shoot this puppy. Right now, it feels a little bit like that, so pushing Peggy's Challenge, I'm just not going to do it. If you know what Peggy's Challenge is, you know where to find it. Go. If you don't, I don't care.
The lights literally went out on us today.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, the lights literally went, if you want to keep the lights on. And sometimes they go out anyway.
For your small monthly contribution, you can support this radio show in Tacoma, Washington.
Do we need to get asked?
Are you doing Diane Rehm?
Oh, you know, I kind of sound like her. I was going for Save the Children.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say, do we need to come up with Ask an Atheist tote bags now?
Possibly.
Yes. Yeah, yes, I want my environmentally friendly shopping bag.
Well, that was one of the things we were hoping to do with the new logo, is actually do stuff that people might want to, like mugs or something.
And we still are.
Yeah.
Swag, if you
swag.
Would.
Swag, if you would. Yeah, not swagger.
Maybe even a coffee cup.
Coffee cup?
Maybe even a coffee mug that you could put maybe your Starbucks coffee in.
Are we doing the NPR thing?
You really want to do that Starbucks serves gay spoo joke. Is that, you really want to do that, isn't it?
Spoo!
It's not a joke.
Spoo!
It's not a joke. Some pastor said it.
Oh, it's a joke.
Yes.
He's a joke.
Yeah. Yeah. Starbucks, this may be the first episode I put explicit on.
Oh, nice.
I don't know.
Parental warning.
I've also decided I'm calling this this episode, and Rosin will enjoy this, I'm calling it The Event.
Yes.
Yes.
I wonder if anybody that listens to this is going to get that.
It's a Mitchell and Webb reference.
Yeah. At least
Thank
one
you.
Person listening to this right now who does not get this reference.
Oh, okay, good.
Well, no, don't reference The Event.
Don't mention The Event.
You're not supposed to mention The Event.
Yes, you will receive this episode with your government food packets.
Just remember to do up the zips on your safety anti-radiation bag.
Yes. Also, once again, I'd really like to apologize to Anthony Penn. I was actually looking forward to this interview.
He was really understanding about it.
I'm glad, so, but I still feel like a complete jerk for not being able to be there technically. You know what it is? Be there technically? That sounds creepy.
Well, you're not flying to Houston or wherever.
No. Wouldn't mind that, though. So what shall we... We've got some material here, which we should probably do.
I think this Atheist or Pigs email is something that needs to be addressed.
All right. I promise. Yeah, okay. Fine. Right. Here we go. We tried doing this when the power went out, but so we have to do it over again. We got this email this morning. It's amazing. This is Aria from Binghamton, New York.
It's Binghamton.
It is Binghamton?
Yeah.
Okay, so they pronounce it right. Fantastic.
You can't be too sure.
Well, you know,
it's pronounced, I don't know, Sussex.
If it was Massachusetts, it'd be Bitten or something.
The only reason I know how to pronounce it correctly is because there's a state school that's SUNY Binghamton, and I went to SUNY Stony Brook.
So. Oh, right on. Okay. If the fundamental print... little jumpy I am. A bit jumpy. If the fundamental principle of atheism is to reject the concepts of higher truths and spirituality, and to limit their comprehension of the universe to what is merely tangible and empirical, then what you think about it, the purpose of life, really consists of nothing more than survival. That is, eating, sleeping, drinking, having sex, and other physical needs and pleasures. If this is the case, then there is no difference between the life of a person and the life of an animal. If the purpose of life is limited to eating, drinking, sleeping, and having sex, then what is the difference between the lives of atheists and the lives of pigs and donkeys? Of course, an atheist may argue that the meaning of life for atheists is the pursuit of knowledge. But if that were the case, then I would argue that there is no difference between atheists and believers. You see, scientists limit their pursuit of knowledge to what is tangible and empirical, but believers pursue knowledge through their mental reasoning.
Thank you, Aria.
So we have a very specific policy here on Ask an Atheist about giving as good as we get. You know, we try not to escalate. We let the people who call in define the level of debate and the level of discourse in the conversations that we have. It's incredibly important to us so that people realize that they're being jerks when they don't realize they're being, you know, it's so people realize that they have control over this debate, and they're making decisions that they may not realize they're making. Because a lot of religious people escalate without realizing that they're escalating. So if you let them define the tenor of the debate, you can show them that they are the ones escalating. So with that in mind, go to hell, you smarmy jerk!
You know what? You have the explicit tag on this one. You want to do that line again?
Is there anything more inflammatory you want to say to, like, match it?
Like, that was radio version of that. Why don't you really say it?
He did just call us pigs and donkeys. He didn't call us, like, pig rectums and donkey balls.
Well, he called us pigs and donkeys. His name is Aria. He's from Binghamton, New York. I have this, like, fun... I have this fun power I got from reading Dune, which is I try to spot somebody's ideology from the stuff that they say when they're not explicitly trying to push their ideology. Serious alarm bells were going off in my head when I read this. And Becky, you actually backed that up for me.
Yeah. I grew up in a Reformed Jewish context, and this is the kind of line of thinking that we would get from very religious Jews. Not just to atheists, but to us inauthentic Reformed Jews.
Right. So
they're basically calling you not, like, you don't count. Like,
No, I didn't count. Of course I didn't.
Of course. Okay.
Nope.
No.
This is even back when you were a believer.
So the pigs and donkeys, otherwise known as unclean animals.
Yes.
He's basically comparing us to unclean animals.
Yes.
So the difference between me and this guy, when I call him a fucking jerk, is...
That was better.
Yeah. is that I'm just using smaller words.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. That's the only difference here. Now, to get to the meat of the argument, so now that I've insulted him and I've violated his sensibilities and he's no longer listening, score one for my side.
Now let's have an actual discussion.
Let's have the actual discussion.
There's an awful lot of suppositions you're making here, Aria.
Right.
Yeah.
Supposition number one is the assumption that meaning has to come from an external source, that the universe must have purpose, and that we must have purpose, that we have no decision for us, that we have no part in the decision of. We are essentially slaves or robots or Legos for use by some sort of ridiculous supernatural power to do with us as he will.
And I find
that completely ridiculous.
See, the thing is, though, if you're a slave and robot to the higher being, you can actually use your mental reasoning.
No, ba-ding! We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah,
I want to stick to the specific assumption here where we have to get our meaning from somewhere else. Why can't I pick something?
The problem is the term purpose, which drives me crazy, because it's like purpose implies that there is something outside of me that defines what my life is for.
Right.
And if I don't accomplish whatever this quote-unquote purpose is before I die, then my life will have been a failure.
Yeah.
And in the religious context, they say that God defines that purpose for you. Well, we're all clear that there is no God. There's no one on the other end of the phone giving this purpose, which means
there's no phone.
There's no phone, yeah. And so therefore, the only person defining this purpose is the religious leaders who are telling us what, you know, standing in proxy for God, telling us what God wants us to do, when really what they're doing is serving their own needs.
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's odd how often God wants what the big important guys in the beards and the expensive bank accounts want.
Yeah,
it's funny how that, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This might sound condescending, but I feel bad for those people in a way. Because it's, how fragile are you that you have to go, okay, well, this is this thing that you need to listen to, and it happens to agree with me.
I would feel bad to them, or I do feel bad for them, up until the point where they use this idea in order to inflict these really horrible social hierarchies.
And do harm, yeah.
Yeah, you know, cut off parts of your body, have the right dietary restrictions. Oh, by the way, women and cattle are essentially the same. At that point, my I feel sorry for you.
Tear down your iPhone monument because there's a gay guy who's running a company now.
Yeah, basically.
I just like the, you know, if there's no difference between the life of a person and life of the animal, you know, that's what atheists think. I do, in fact, know atheist peers that do believe that, no, there is no difference between a person and an animal because people are animals.
Right.
But the life of a person and the life lived by an animal are vastly different. The life lived by a non-human animal may be very different. The fact that also this...
That may be an equivocation, though.
It may be, on my part.
Right on.
Hmm. Okay.
No, I mean, there are atheists who say there really is no difference between people and animals. They should be treated equally. Like, that is a thing that people think.
Yeah, and when people say that, they're not saying that humans need to be slaughtered for meat. They're saying that.
That just I think, underscores that this argument, that is, if there is, you know, if we're not better than animals, that means both animals and us are dirt.
Yeah.
What if both animals and us are important? Why do you always have to render down? Mm-hmm. Why do you always assume that things are least important when you don't have some cosmological asshole coming in and saying, me first, me first, me first, pay attention to me, not other people, not the fact that you're dying of disease, not the fact that you're starving, not the fact that your book tells you to whip people or to commit genocide. Me first, me first, me first. How is that better? How is that using your mental faculties? How is that, what did you put? Pursue knowledge through their mental reasoning. There's no reason there. It's not reasonable. It's ridiculous. It's mythology. It's three-year-old stories.
Well, to stick on that mental reasoning thing, he's trying to make, you know, the delineation that scientists limit their pursuit of knowledge to that which is tangible,
sure,
and empirical, and believers pursue knowledge through their mental reasoning. Basically, like, we get to make up answers.
Right.
You know, and therefore we're better. You know,
yeah,
you're limited to what you can prove. We can also say God said it.
Well, here's the thing, though. It's that atheists do not limit their comprehension of the universe to merely what is tangible.
Exactly.
And empirical. If I'm going to be comprehending my place in the universe, a tremendous amount of that is my decisions and how they're going to affect others and the relationships I'm building with others. Is it just always going to be what is tangible, what is empirical, or is some of it going to be based on my hopes, my decisions, my connections between people?
Your ability to try and predict what will happen in your own future and how it's relevant to you.
So I guess my actual official response to Aria from Binghamton is, if religious people, then, you know, okay, I'll take that. I'm an empiricist. I believe in what is actually tangible. That has a much wider berth than I think Aria thinks, because he's limited by religious thinking. Real and tangible to me has a specific meaning that I think doesn't match his. And I'd love to discuss that with somebody who isn't a jerk. But he's not standing in for his religion, even though if he plays his hand a little bit. He's saying that all religious people pursue their knowledge through mental reasoning. And I have a response to you. Pastor James David Manning of Atla Worldwide Missionary is taking aim at Starbucks, claiming that the coffee giant is ground zero for Ebola because franchises serve as meeting places for upscale sodomites interested in clandestine sexual activities. The inflammatory statement comes in the wake of Starbucks' release of an ad campaign geared towards the LGBTQ community, featuring two contestants from RuPaul's Drag Race Girls. So please show me on the doll, where this is the pursuit of knowledge through mental reasoning. Or is this just not caving into dogma because this is what the book says? This is what some people who didn't know what a germ was wrote 2,500, 3,000, 6,000 years ago.
And because this book says, you know, I don't like Tuggays, then that means anyone who supports Tuggays is Ebola, because that's a clear, obvious
connection.
For them,
the mental reasoning was that I go to Starbucks and I've seen gay people on a poster at Starbucks.
Yeah.
So that's where gay people go to hook up. That's their mental reasoning. I'm not saying it's good mental reasoning by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
But it's their attempt at it.
What you're doing, Aria, is you're accusing us of dehumanizing people and then incredibly underplaying what religion actually does. If the only difference between atheists and theists were the fact that we believe in what is tangible and empirical, and religious believers actually pursue knowledge through their mental reasoning, my show wouldn't have a need to exist. But there is so much more of that. There's so much more to religious experience, some of it good, but a lot of it terrible. And that's what we need to talk about when we interface with religious people, when they want to have this debate, which they do a lot more often than they realize.
Mm-hmm. What I'm confused by is that this pastor is using it as ground zero for Ebola. If he was using his mental reasoning and his scripture,
right,
clearly Starbucks would be ground zero for leprosy, since leprosy is the affliction, the germ-based affliction that is given to gays and to sodomites and to other people who go against the word of the Lord.
Really?
Yes. That was my bat mitzvah portion.
Bat.
You're welcome.
Mitzvah.
The more you know.
Yes. You can also get bad junk flowing from your junk.
Hmm.
That also is an
affliction.
That's
empirical.
It means that you are spiritually afflicted and practicing all of these terrible things that are against the Lord.
No, it means you have to go to Planned Parenthood.
Yes. Yes, it does. Certainly not Starbucks. Although, actually, the local coffee house would be a great place to do public health outreach.
Yeah.
Now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of all these horrible things how they used to... Well, we're off the air. I can say pretty much anything, right?
Well, yeah, within reason.
There used to be...
Just talk in the microphone.
Okay.
Who?
Go ahead. Finish.
Oh, sorry. There used to be the term called the clap, and then it'll become like the pumpkin spice latte. Got a little of the pumpkin spice going on.
Well, there was some debate before we... in the pre-production meeting about whether we want to tell the full story of this Pastor James David Manning and his thing with Starbucks.
Oh, yeah. Because, he's the one who came out who said that they use sodomites boo in...
Yeah, there's a postscript to this. So
in their foam lattes.
In response to this statement he made about Starbucks being ground zero for Ebola, a whole group of people bought a bunch of Starbucks coffee, parked themselves right outside his church, and handed it out to people on the street. Here, have some Starbucks. Have some Starbucks. Have a nice day. And he was so incensed by this that he started saying that they brew Starbucks coffee with the semen of sodomites.
And you know what the first thing I thought was, which is kind of ridiculous? Well, here's a guy who clearly doesn't know what it tastes like.
Starbucks, you mean?
Yes, of
yes
course.
Yes and yes.
Yes. Yep.
But, yeah, it's just, I couldn't believe it. It's like, you know, you just... How is this thinking? Like, how does this even... This is the same church, which I will give someone a serious credit for this. It was a gay person went up because this guy's got a long record of speaking out against the gays. Went up and says, all right, you're biblical. I demand that you stone me. Actually went up to this guy's church and demanded to be stoned.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, not stoned.
I'm not good at... never mind.
I heard that it's everybody now.
No, that's a Bob Dylan. Everybody must get
I'm not
stoned.
Good at Bob Dylan. I'm not good at anything, really.
What
have I wrought? Oh. I love these things because they're okay. This tickles my North Korea bone.
Yeah,
is what it does. Is I love these stories. It's like I follow TB Joshua on Facebook because his posts are just absolutely insane.
Yeah,
they're nuts. They're. But the other side of this is this guy, this pastor David James Manning, the $6 million pastor, and. And T.B. Joshua, they command the attentions and speak to the morality and are...
They command the pocketbooks, though.
And command the pocketbooks of literally millions of people.
Yeah.
People and then I get sad.
Yeah, that's the scary part of this.
And then I want to drink.
I think this is what we were talking about with the Russia thing. Is like, right. At what point do you like, God, this is hilariously stupid, but buried underneath there's actual suffering being caused by these people.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it goes back to that thing, you know, laugh because what can you do?
You laugh because what you can do is shine a spotlight on it, which is what we do.
There's an episode I did, God, I think it was season 3, where we interviewed that YouTube guy who plays God.
Thunderful.
Oh, Mr. Deity.
Mr. Deity.
Mr. Deity.
Yeah, we interviewed Mr. Deity, and that was fun because we did part of the interview in character and part of it out. And the part of the interview in character, I actually kind of like doing in character interviews and stuff like that because you get to ask really dumb questions. And and if you haven't noticed in the 4 or 5 years of Ask an Atheist, I like asking dumb questions. you know, the second interview came along, and it became a discussion about humor. And why do I spend so much time? You know, I don't do it on the air because then people are going to accuse me of stabbing puppies. But I do laugh a lot at really dark stuff that makes me disturbed. Because if I didn't laugh, It would stay with me, and it would just live in my head. And
see, I'm running into the opposite. I've found that over time, I am finding less stuff funny, and I still can find some really dark stuff funny. But it's like, you know, I was thinking the other day, it's like empathy is the enemy of humor. Because once you start really feeling for something, you can't laugh at it.
I would disagree. I do not think at all that they're antithetical to each other. I think that in empathy, sometimes you can find that mutually appreciated humor. Yeah. And that if the humor that you find requires you to set aside your empathy, it's
Something's up with the humor.
Something's up
Not
with the humor.
Empathy.
It's you're laughing at the expense of something. I think, Sam, you've heard this refrain from comics. Comedy is punching up, not punching down.
Yeah, it's one of the things I live by. Punch up, don't punch down. And comedians who tend to punch down, no matter their political affiliation, tend to be manifestly unfunny to me.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I was thinking the delivery system of certain types of news, too. Because I notice when I'm in a group of friends and it's post-show or whatever, and we're all just chilling over a beer and talking about something that's kind of, in any other context to me, would be kind of upsetting. Mm-hmm. The shared experience and the ability to, like, maybe have a little dark humor about it and laugh is a lot easier than when I'm on my own at home and I'm reading the news and something horrible happens and my first instinct is either to get really upset or get angry.
I guess what I'm saying is just because I'm laughing about it now and again doesn't mean I think it was funny. Like, I was cracking jokes about my divorce while it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the courtroom, because that's just what I do. And, you know, when my grandmother died, we would have been doing her memory an incredible disservice if we didn't make a joke now and again, because that was her coping mechanism.
Yeah.
And she made that very clear. Well, that and Benson and Hedges, but that's neither here nor there. Anyway, we're running to the top of the hour. We're running near 5 o'clock.
I just want to throw one last little thing in here about
sure.
Because in my head, when I look at it, it's like, have you? Any of you guys watched the show Tosh.0?
Yes.
I find him kind of disturbing.
I used to find the show really funny until it was more about people actually damaging themselves, like getting seriously hurt and people laughing about it. And I'm like, I can't find that funny, because this is where I mean, like, empathy is the enemy of humor. Is
sure.
I can't find that funny because all I can see is pain.
Yeah, you cringe at it.
You know, it's not amusing to me to see someone fall off a building and land on their face. It's like
Tosh.0 making fun of people who are getting injured and not intentionally is one thing. But on the other hand, the last time I had like a serious screw up with the radio station was when I was actually in the hospital. I had a dental procedure go really wrong, and it created this infection that basically took over my face, and my face started inflating. There was a not large but not insignificant chance that if the infection reached my eyes, I would go blind. It was really that kind of thing, and my face was just, you know, I was starting to look like something out of a Giger painting, and it was just and my lip was splitting and I couldn't really see out of one eye.
We were worried about a compromised airway,
and we were worried about me being able to breathe. And then my friend Steve comes to see me in the hospital and says, Sam, how you doing? It's good to see that you're keeping a stiff upper lip about everything.
Uh-huh.
I died. Not literally. I did not stop laughing for half an hour, because that was in the moment exactly what I needed. That was the tension breaker. It gave me a chance to sit back and recontextualize. And he didn't mean it mean. I mean, it sounds kind of mean, but he knew me well enough to know that is kind of thing I needed, because everybody else around me, and Becky, who just, oh my God, this is the worst he's ever been, he's gonna die. I'm not, but she thinks I'm gonna die. And so it's like, this is like really heavy stuff. This is like, oh my God, you know, this is House without all the cool parts with Hugh Laurie in it. And then he comes in and goes, hey, keep it a stiff upper lip. And I'm like, thank you, yes.
Well, and that's
He sounded like a Muppet.
Yeah.
And that's a shining example of empathy and humor being intertwined there, because he was able to see, hey, this person could use...
And that is really it at its best. And sometimes it falls apart. You know, sometimes you think you're being empathetic and funny, and it just falls on its face. And I think the responsibility there goes... wow, that was a war crime. So, sorry. Mea culpa. Anyway, it is now hitting the top of the hour, and I need to do some editing, and we got a post-show in like 8 minutes, so I'm going to save this off and maybe do some... No, no. You know, I'm going to hit post-show, and then I'm going to do editing afterwards. So this is going to show up a little later. I'll post something on Facebook. I will. We'll talk to you guys next week. Rosalind's here, so you know what we're going out on.
Yay! That's my favorite song!
Yes! Boy, it's credits time. My co-hosts were Dave Brulette, Becky Friedman, and Rosalind Townsend. I'd like to thank Dr. Anthony Pinn for us jerking him around. I am so sorry. Production assistants were Rosalind Townsend and Paul Mops. My writing was Rebecca Witzman, Dave Brulette, and Becky Friedman. Music, as usual, is by Chris Coleman, Phil Whitfield, and Steve Siemens. What is this guy's name?
The Ramtha follower.
The Ramtha guy. Yeah, MacDog. Yes.
MacDog.
And I am still Sam Olvey. Like I said, we're pre-recorded next week and maybe for the next little bit of while. It's been fun. This is the tension breaker I absolutely needed. To see you guys next week. When Ramtha wants to get high, I do too. So what do you do? I call Jason Knight and say, where's the brew? Tunes, what do you want to rock? I want to roll, so let's go to Yanni's house. Yanni wants to kick it too, so we hop in his Lexus. I take a doo-doo in the back seat. Is that unique? And here's my favorite song from the 80s. It's Aha, I keep rolling. That's why I say Ramtha's on the strolling. Molding like a baby. And real quick.
Oh my. How's it going? This is my voice talking about things that are terribly important.
Fantastic.
Everything is terribly important.
I'm terribly important.
Damn,
you guys can all go
straight.
Home. This is my show.
Everything is awful.
Everything is awful.